two people?
You may think it's 9:30. We did two.
Yeah, well, we did until we recognized the time. Then we went, oh, no, it's not. That's right. And someone told me, yes, it doesn't have to be nine. So, anyways, so thanks. Here, I'll just put the lights crossed. Okay, it's easy. It's a very little. Yes, that does happen in retreats quite a bit, and the repetition of times and posting of times becomes very important. All right, table guy, table man. Yes. No. Yes. No. Yes. No. Yes. No. Yes. 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 No. Well, let's begin with the preliminaries, and by the time we finish the preliminaries, the others might show up, or Jeff might show up. So, and if they don't show up, we'll just do the preliminaries again. Again.
The four thoughts that turn the mind from samsara. Da ji da jo dan zan di chin e yang yang ne ka le da re la me kun zang gi go pon tu te shan dong ja da ta ren chen di yang chi da tu ki dra dang Nam chi ling pa mi da yi, da shan mi ta shu di da. Ko wei ni da kya ke kyan, de wei go ka ma shi pe. Se pe den la mi ta wa, yan yang de pe.
As this excellent body of mind with leisure and endowments will be difficult to obtain repeatedly in the future. Right now, we will accomplish the state of the Anstapasamanta Vajra to meaningfully benefit others. Also, it is not certain when the hateful enemy of this present precious body, Mara death, will arrive. I and other beings are permanent, the time of death being uncertain. Since there is no opportunity for happiness wherever one is born in samsara, and since a happy existence was never seen, we will enter the path of nirvana. In order for this body with leisure and wealth to possess meaning, we will abandon the three non-virtuous poisonous afflictions, develop diligence in virtuous actions, and protect the vows and commitments of the three doors. Going for refuge. Namo Dashanam Kanyam Pesanchanam Du dinizorva me jantubar Chin la kundro la mala tabchi Nam tro tro soli da la tabchi Arjo kansa kundro la tabchi Kani soa sanje la tabchi Shiva Chandra Damsha now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space. Go for refuge to the gurus, the source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Adams, the stores of Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Namo. For now, until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space. Go for refuge to the Guru, source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Adams, the source of the Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Generating bodhicitta.
Glories engendered out and dashing. Deva chodragam bhagne lagam. Kula tanyam yampe sanchuti. Chanchu nipo toshi. Tadi rodu sanchen kundam shir Sangye gopam se te to pacha Teji rosa dorje nimpolam Lame chodira de sambali.
May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering. We joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial towards all in order to attain a heart of awakening, in order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms. We must attain to the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in the sense of past teaching, a path that illuminates the clear of our essence. May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering. Be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial towards all in order to attain a heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain to the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in these unsurpassed teachings. Sarva Siddhi Mempraya Sarva Kama Sutra Mere Chitam Shriyam Kuru Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Benzri Mame Musha Benzri Bhava Maha Samaya Sato Benzra Sata Samaya Manupalaya Benzra Sata Tenapa Drishta Dito Mebhava Sutokayo Mebhava Supokayo Mebhava Anurakto Mebhava Sarva Siddhi Mepraya Sarva Karma Sutra Mehiti Sashriyam Guru Hung Ha 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 o Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Benzri Mame Muncha Benzri Bhava Maha Samaya Sato Benzra Sata Samaya Manupalaya Benzra Sata Tenopadishtam
Sitokaya me bhava, sitokaya me bhava, anurakto me bhava, sarva sthiti me prayaccha, sarva karma sucha me hetitam shriyam kuruvam, aha aha ho bhagavan, sarva tata gata, vendre mame muncha, vendre bhava, maha samaya sato.
Short mandala offering. Sa sa shi
bu chu 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 shi me to tram ri ra li shi ni de yam pa di san je shi
Guru Yoga. Om, ah, ha.
Ram re ga da jin kam su. Ram da ga me po chan da. Ram sa sa me la ma la. Ta yi du we so wa da. Ja ru tu ba ju jin ji.
Palace of unceasing inner radiance is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru, to whom we supplicate with a devoted mind. Bless us to accomplish the rainbow body. Om Ah Hum. In the Buddha field of one's own originally pure awareness, in the palace of unceasing inner radiance is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru, to whom we supplicate with a devoted mind.
Bless us to accomplish the rainbow body.
Before we go on, just a few, if you have a few questions, otherwise we'll jump the text. And today the plan is to complete this reading transmission and a commentary of the Bodhicitta Vivarana. But if you have any questions, let's, as they say, let's entertain them.
The nine moods of the dance?
That's coming up. Yeah. Yeah. Any others? Tajita shamme shamme vati shamme tashram mamkare mamkare mare tisko tisi korote keyure tiso vati olande vishuddha namalle Malla panaye kukure kaka grase grasane umuke paramuke amuke shamitvani sarva graha bandane nane nigrahitva sarva para pavadira bimukta mara pasha svabhifa buddha mudra anutita sarva mare pushta rita pali shure bigansadu sarva mara Karmani. So, don't see any questions? Okay. This means everything's clear.
I wondered actually if the Alaya consciousness could be compared.
Doesn't exist.
Not
truly. Okay, next question. Okay, yeah, all right, I'll entertain it.
If it could be compared to the Abhidhamma, the underlying stream.
Bhavanga.
Thank you, the Bhavanga.
Yeah, some have tried. Some have made that assumption that they're talking about the same thing. There's no evidence for it. But various scholars and Buddhist, some Buddhist teacher scholars have tried to say or have posited it's the same thing. But there's no proof or evidence that the Bhavanga consciousness. Or the Bhavanga, the continuum consciousness, is the same at all as the Alaya consciousness. There are a few references to you know, seeds and things like that, but it's possible. But you know, in the development of ideas, and development not just of ideas but of meditative experience and linking things together, it's probably quite likely that it's the same, or referring to the same similar thing. But yeah, I wouldn't try to make that unless it was really clear. Yeah. Yes?
Would the Bhavanga or storehouse carry the sankharas?
You just said Bhavanga or storehouse, so you're now saying they're identical.
Well, either or. Are we talking about the sankharas when we refer to that?
The storehouse of consciousness, one of the things it supposedly does is carries the traces of all karmic activity. Whereas Bhavanga consciousness is more like a continuum of moments freed of karmic activity. So in some ways they're quite different, you know, that way. So can you say it's the samskaras? Not for Bhavanga, no, because it's actually, in a sense, freed. Is it there somewhere? Yeah, in seed form. Just because it's awareness, consciousness, yes, it would be. In Bhavanga citta, in Alaya consciousness, in a sense, it is different and yet it's empty, but same. But it's different in that it's really containing all the traces of consciousness activity, positive, negative, neutral, and like a giant reservoir. So could you say it is a samskaras? Yes, it is like the, how do I say it? It is what happens when there's clinging to the samskaras. They leave traces. Clinging to that which is actually momentary experience, conceptual experience, leaves traces. How's that? But I wouldn't say that the storehouse of consciousness is the samskaras or contains the samskaras. I wouldn't go that far. That would take a bit of time to tease that out as to why. But if you think about every mental activity, and some, by the way, don't really go very far. But every repetitive mental activity lays down seeds, lays down patterning. Yeah? And that patterning has to go somewhere. When we talk about neurophysiology, then that patterning, you'd say, would be in the brain, which we now know means it also is distributed in many organs and many different systems in the body connected to the brain. In the Buddhist model, they're not using the word brain, they're just saying it is stored somewhere. And it's stored in mind. And actually it works, which is a beautiful thing, is you don't need a brain. I don't know if you know that. But you don't, it's pretty clear from certain evidence, especially people that have very small brains, they discover very, very good cognitive capacity, but tiny, tiny brains. All the rest is fluid and stuff like that. So one wonders what the brain is really doing sometimes. And yet with a small pinprick, you'd say, within the brain, like a stroke or a bullet or even a pinprick, you'd say, oh, we do need our brain. Only a tiny pinprick. A little tiny few vessels of damage and a cluster of neurons, you say, definitely the brain's needed. But there's people with brains this big and are functioning really well. Interesting, eh? There's even some birds that have found, I think a crow, that has better cognitive capacities in certain areas than humans do. Most humans do. Brains. I've seen slugs that I think are better. I've seen worms that way outperform humans in many, many tasks. And their brains are just, you know, like they're like 100,000 cells. Amazing, isn't it? So where is all this stored? So you say, well, but the brain is vast. It's got more neurons, more neural connections than all the stars of this galaxy. So that's the explanation. Possibly. So all these traces, and then they're not talking about just the traces of an individual, but the traces of all the seeds of previous lifetimes, which in our modern terms, especially the way Namdrim Rinpoche would teach it, karmic, genetic, epigenetic, societal, layer upon layer upon layer of patterning, if you wish. Okay? So, hope that's okay right now. But is it an area that is, what's the word, sketchy in terms of detail? Absolutely. So if you're going to look for definitive answers about the Bawanga consciousness, you're not going to find it. If you're going to look for really definitive, almost not scientific, but a lot written about the nature of the storehouse consciousness, you're not going to find it. There's not much said about it. There never has been. But you can have profound experiences of it. But not much has really been written in detail about it. Mind you, there's a lot of imagination about it. So a lot gets written about it. And a lot gets connected to the Jungian collective unconscious, which if you really study, you'll see is quite different. So lots of that kind of thing. Trying to figure out what it is by linking it to all kinds of other models and things. Well, any others? So to read again, number, let's go to 85, page 8 and page 9, because I think we need to go back one today. Rooted firmly because of compassion. So we're on the bottom of page 8 and starting on page 9, or going to page 9, rooted firmly because of compassion and arising from the shoot of awakening mind, bless you. The true awakening, that is the sole fruit of altruism. This the conqueror's children cultivate. So we've already been through that, but I think it's a good way to start the morning, and it's a good way to start the rest of this. Is it's all going to be really at a certain point about developing compassion, emptiness, not so much emptiness, compassion. Lots of people start out with emptiness, 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 and yes, that is actually it. That's the heart. But eventually you realize that without recognizing the scope of compassion, the emptiness is a bit empty. So the shoot of the awakening mind, the shoot of bodhicitta, is compassion. But compassion is not bodhicitta, because you have to have a lot of compassion already to have bodhicitta emerge. Okay. To quote many, many great masters on this point, the true awakening, that is the sole fruit of altruism, or of compassion, of involvement with others, this the conqueror's children cultivate. So it's just telling you over and over again that to move towards true awakening, not cessation of your suffering states, but to move towards true awakening, then one is going to have to focus on altruism. One is going to have to really get involved in the compassionate welfare of others, but from the point of view of ultimate nature of emptiness. All right. Number 86. When through practice it becomes firm, that is the generation of compassion, vast compassion and emptiness, then alarm by other suffering. So as I said before, the greater that you understand suffering, that doesn't mean you go and want to suffer, although sometimes you have to. You actually really have to go into places and situations where there's a lot of suffering. But unless you really understand why beings suffer deeply, you won't have compassion. You'll have theoretical compassion. But you may have a lot of love for beings. Should I say that again? I mean, hopefully, maybe, because I see. You can have amazing love for beings. Namjoon Rinpoche once described a being in Burma, I think it was Burma, that he met, who had practiced years and years and years of pure loving kindness meditation. He was a master of loving kindness. And people would come from all over Burma just to be in the being's presence because it was so radiant, so glorious. But Rinpoche said, but the being wasn't awakened. But he was a master of loving kindness. But you just wanted to be around, and everybody wanted to be around that being because he felt so good. But among the masters, among the different teachers and so on, the being wasn't awakened. Didn't have liberation, but he was so kind. He was just so engulfing people in a feeling of happiness and kindness, yeah. But not liberating them. He didn't know how to liberate beings. So, the more you know about how beings and why beings suffer, which is the heart of insight, should bring you to a greater depth of compassion for beings, yeah. Then bringing together the meditations on vast emptiness will bring about tremendous awakening. The bodhisattvas renounce the bliss of concentration. Well, here's something fantastic, eh? They renounce clinging to the cessation of their formations, the suffering states. Because as a bodhisattva, you know that the suffering states, physical and mental, are not only transitory, they're empty. They can't harm anything, as long as you don't harm others. So, in this sense, the focus shifts, if you're fortunate. Depends on your teachers, depends on your merit, depends on all kinds of factors. The focus eventually shifts from you getting into good states. You'll even see this in meditation. The struggle to have good states, to stay buoyant, to stay always in a perfect state of harmony and equanimity, and that's the measure of liberation. And you'll see that. Whereas now your energy is put more into the welfare of others, even if it physically hurts, even if it mentally hurts, even if it's agitating and difficult. So it says that a high level bodhisattva can go into the depths of hell to help beings. They're not afraid of being hurt. So it says there, and plunge even to the depths of relentless hells, to free beings. So it is very enticing to chase after states and also to feel warnings in the Mahamudra texts and so on, in the Dzogchen texts. The greatest danger, really, is not negative stuff coming up. It is bliss, clarity, and non-distinction. You can stay in that. You can really perfect that for the rest of your life and really think you've got it until you get swept away. until you lose it. So there's a great, great story in a history, the biography of Urgen Tulku Rinpoche, of this great enlightened master, his great grandfather, Samten Rinpoche, who was just this very awake being, and visiting a nunnery visiting a place where these great meditators were sealed up in retreat, and going around and kind of yelling at the retreatants. You're really yelling at them, you stupid, dull, what are you doing? And he would test them that way. You know, he would really test them by asking about their meditation. And it was great, one response by this one female yogini who'd been in practice for a long time. He's yelling at her. She's going, yeah, it's not like that. And he just describes beautifully her awake mind. And he goes, great, congratulations. I'm really happy to hear that. In other words, you're not meditating on states. You're not clinging to bliss, clarity, and non-distinction. You're not clinging to godlike states. Your mind's awake. And she clearly demonstrated to him that her mind was awake. And he was so happy. He was so happy. He says something like, oh, there's genuine practice here. There's real practice. So this is what it's talking about there. It's very easy to go. The bliss of concentration just doesn't mean you have concentrated states. It's a reference to the bliss of ceasing your experience so that there's no suffering. It's called Nirodha Samapatti. And there are people who get very good at that. It's one of the tests like in the Mahasiddhanta tradition. If you can remain for 24 hours or 24 hours or 48 hours in Nirodha Samapatti, which is a state of suspended animation where, and it's a good test. It's a good test of meditative ability where basically there's nothing happening. Your respiration is almost undetectable. Your heart rate's it's very low heart rate. And you're in a state where literally you've got to program yourself to come out at a certain time. And usually by tradition, you have to declare to the monastery you're going to do that so that they can actually pull you out if there is an emergency like a flood or a fire or something happening. Yeah, or whatever's happening. So you have to tell the abbot, and you have to let them know what you're doing. And it's considered a test in the Southeast Asian Vipassana tradition to be able to remain very long in this cessation of all your formations. There's no clinging to formations, but there's no you. There's no experience actually. There's afterwards. There's a recollection almost like no thing, no going, nowhere, no clinging. And so this is what's known as the bliss of concentration. It's to the quite advanced stage of what's called Nirodha Samapatti, and basically going out in this life without dying and without attaining full liberation. One just basically goes out for longer and longer periods of time. And it's considered by the Mahayanas and so on to be a no-no. Why is it a no-no? Because you train like that, and you feel you've attained liberation. But even the text, it's not liberation. But it is a very high state. It's pretty darn good state of mental concentration. Yeah, and you have to have experienced a pretty high level of transcendent experience, and some good level of freedom too. So what they're looking at there is, can a being take their freedom, their pretty high degree of freedom now, and turn that on the liberation of other beings, even though they will suffer, even though they will be involved in all kinds of shenanigans. 87. This is indeed amazing. Praiseworthy it is. This is the excellent way of the sublime, that they give away their own flesh and wealth is not surprising at all, and even give away their lifetime. In other words, not to say that they kill themselves, but they will use up their, like a Karmapa, like a Namjol Rinpoche, they will use up, instead of going the yogic route of safeguarding their energies and extending their life, they will expend their life energies for the welfare of beings and exhaust their life energies, whereas they could have maybe lived for 10, 15, 20, 30 more years by engaging in the liberation of others, not just remaining in states. So you may ask, why all the meditation? Well, not here. We don't. I mean, we do. There's a fair bit of meditation. But if you look at maybe perhaps Sopema, you may ask, why is someone staying in retreat for 14, 15, 16 years in Sopema or Tibet and so on? And that is to perfect their bodhisattva powers, their abilities. But you'll see sometimes people come out, or they're asked to come out by their teachers to teach for the welfare of other beings. And boy, it's pretty extraordinary. Whereas others who've perhaps done work in previous lifetimes are called upon right away, perhaps in their teens or 20s or early 30s, to teach right away for the welfare of beings. So it depends. 87, this is indeed amazing, praiseworthy. This is the excellent way of the sublime, that they give away their own flesh or their life for the welfare of other beings. And wealth is not surprising at all. 88, those who understand this emptiness of phenomena, yet also conform to the law of karma and its results. That is more amazing than amazing. That is more wondrous than wondrous. So while I'm saying that, I see a vision of the face of Kunu Lama, the great Kunu Lama, teaching the 365 verses of Bodhicitta. And that's he actually has a verse that sounds almost identical to 88 in there, of his praises of Bodhicitta. One of the most amazing texts ever written. He's saying that a being who can understand, dwell in this emptiness of phenomena, but yet also is involved in the law of karma and its results, that is still subject to it and enters into the karma of other beings. He's saying that is more amazing than amazing. That is more wondrous than wondrous, because very easy not to do anything. 89. Those who wish to save sentient beings, even if they are reborn in the mires of existence, in other words, even if they're reborn in Toronto or Vancouver or Richmond or Vaughan or North York or Wisconsin or Colorado or Guatemala, wherever. I'm talking about the heavenly realms now. But imagine being born into Delhi or into the poverty, some of the poor areas of Delhi or Calcutta, or into very difficult circumstances, and being able to rise above that and display for beings the capacity to rise above that and be a wonderfully compassionate, wise being. They are not sullied by the stains of the events, even though they may get an arm chopped off, lose some fingers, be beaten up, poisoned, and everything else. Their mind's nature is not sullied by the stains of its events, just like the petals of a lotus born in a lake. In other words, the petals of a lotus will not carry the mud and will even be free eventually of the water droplets once it comes out, emerges onto the water, and is in the sun. So the lotus is just not will not have mud on it. And that's also particularly to plant leaves. They're quite amazing. You can study plant leaves. Pretty extraordinary. Ever seen how waterproof plant leaves are? And how things don't stick to it, and yet they respire like a good rain jacket. They're extraordinary. Anyways, that means untouched. Even though one's body may be damaged, one's all kinds of things a bit bruised around, but the mind's nature and the awareness of liberation can't be what's the word, harmed. Number 90, though bodhisattvas such as Samantabhadra have burned the wood of afflictions, that is the burning wood of afflictions, with the wisdom fire of emptiness, they still remain moistened by compassion. So in other words, compassion keeps rising to the surface. 91. Those under the power of compassion. That is, now I want to, oh, I'm going to read it and then go into this because it needs some explanation. Those under the power of compassion display acts of departing, birth, and merriment, renouncing kingdom, engaging in ascetic penance, great awakening, and defeating the Mars. Okay, so we need to look at this. When it says those under the power of compassion, under the power of compassion, which has tremendous power to enact good things for beings, fearlessly enacting good activities, they're not under the power of compassion, but they're under the power of so much training in compassion that, as Namjoon Rinpoche said many years ago during the first academy, they don't really have a choice. In other words, the foremost thought is for the welfare of other beings. So this is the power. Yeah. This is the power. You may say, oh, well, that means a brainwashing. No, it's actually realizing that that it is actually the awakening. It is the awake mind is the full fruition of compassion. Display acts of departing. Now, departing here is funny, but it's about right. It means actually descending or to leave a pure land for the benefit of beings. That's actually what it means. So the displaying acts of departing, this is all from the Buddha's life of a great nirmanakaya. So there's lowly nirmanakayas. No, lowly. There are great nirmanakayas, like the Buddha, who took physical form and displayed amazing physical manifestation of awake mind. But he came down or descended or emanated from a pure land like Tushita or other pure lands like a Dakini realm and so on. But there was a display of that. There was actually beings noting that happened because of such being such a great nirmanakaya. Then he took birth. He had merriment. How did he have merriment? Well, he was born as a prince. So he was entertained. He had pleasures of the palace and all kinds of things. His father and his mother, especially his father, tried to make sure he had every kind of enjoyment so he wouldn't leave the palace. He wouldn't leave Toronto or wherever it is and come up here to the Dharma Center or go to India or go to Calcutta or go to a place where they're going to start to see suffering. So this is in the lifetime of the Buddha. And that can happen to us, actually, you see. You know? Have you ever heard maybe parents saying, why would you go on retreat? You could be happy here in Toronto or wherever it is, Vancouver, New York, or L.A. Why would you go do that when you could have every kind of enjoyment and pleasure? And you're going into retreat. I've heard this. I've heard people tell me that their parents or their friends have been working on them. Why would you ever do that? Why would you, go to a cave or a cabin and do that when you could be so happy at home? So that's it. Renouncing kingdom. That is renouncing the bondage of the life. Engaging in ascetic penance, which means going a route of doing all kinds of practices, and as the Buddha did, perhaps, you go through a period where you try to do physical things in pursuit of liberation, like he did. He was living off, I believe it was down to one grain of rice per week. Many yogis have done that and still continue to do that, thinking that was a route to liberation. He discovered it wasn't. Great awakening and defeating the Mars, defeating the hosts of Mars, such as clinging to the five skandhas, clinging to emotions as being real, not acknowledging death, and clinging to meditative states. Those are the Mars. Okay, so 92. Turning the wheel of Dharma, entering the realm of all gods, and likewise display the acts of going beyond the bounds of sorrow. So here this is a great bodhisattva, a great nirmanakaya, turning the wheel of dharma. We'll turn the wheel of dharma, we'll teach. They will be able to enter the realm of gods and liberate godlike beings from suffering. They won't be scared of going into palaces. They won't be scared of going to the Toronto Expo. CNE. The pleasure grounds of Toronto. Is it August? Late August? Yeah, late August. The pleasure grounds of Toronto. The various rides. Eating cotton, cotton candy? Eating cotton candy, going to the various pavilions where they serve all kinds of food, right?
Fried Mars bars.
Pardon?
They have deep fried chocolate bars.
Deep fried chocolate bars, things like that. The wondrous pleasure palaces of Toronto.
I've had one, it's really good.
It's really good. And now, of course, even more than the CNE would be your internet or your cell phone provider store, right? With all the cool stuff,
yeah.
Earbuds and things like that. So and virtual pleasure palaces of, buy a new iPhone, get the latest, so whatever, you see what I'm saying. Okay, so the ability to go and teach to godlike beings that actually aren't apparently suffering, but are, is even more difficult than going to beings and teaching beings that are obviously suffering. Because the godlike beings are really having a good time. So like why would I practice Dharma? Like, tell me why, when I'm having such a good time in life? But yet, as some people said to me, it's fantastic. I'm having such a good life, but I'm miserable a lot of the time. Isn't that interesting? Okay. So some people tell me that in confidence, kind of like quietly. I have an amazing life, but why do I feel miserable and unhappy, really kind of deeply unhappy quite often? And so to go into the godlike realm is can in some ways be more difficult than someone who's really, really suffering, who's obviously suffering. I'm having a very difficult life, I heard. How am I going to come out of that? Yeah? And often you see people coming to Dharma because they've fallen out of the godlike realm. They've now lost their health, or they did lose their health quite a bit, and they're going through tremendous emotional problems because of loss of family, loss of animals, whatever it is. And they come to the Dharma through coming out of a godlike state and realizing it is just not satisfactory for them in this world. And likewise display the act of going and beyond the bounds of sorrow. Yeah. So beyond the bounds of sorrow means going beyond, moving sorrow around so it feels like it's not sorrow. That sound familiar? You just kind of keep moving the pieces around on the chessboard. Okay, now I'm not sorrowful. Oh no, I am. I move that one. If I just keep moving the chess pieces around, I will be fine. I will be fine. I can hear it. Wayne's World too. I will be fine if I just keep rearranging the chessboard of life and keep doing things to make me happy. I hope this is not too direct teaching for you. I hope it's, but this is what it is. Okay. So in a godlike realm, you have basically an infinite, you can conjure an infinite number of things to play with, right? To keep you happy. It used to be you'd have dancing girls, you'd have dancing boys, after supper you'd have entertainment, you'd have sumptuous meals, you'd have all the alcohol you want, you could go out and go hunting in your own private grounds, right, which was like 4,000 acres of wilderness, and they'd have hunting parties. You could do anything. You have parties like, can you imagine, remember the days we used to have parties? Well, I didn't really, but I had a few when I was a teenager. And I heard of people that have week-long parties. Who here has ever had a week-long party? You see? That's so cool. So imagine a life where you can have like for the rest of your life, week-long parties. Yeah? You can invite anybody over to your place. You can trash the place. I've seen those movies. You can trash the place, you have pool parties, right? Okay. So then eventually you might get discouraged by that. Number 93. I gotta move along here. In guises of Brahma, Indra, and Vishnu, and that of fierce Rudra forms, they perform the compassionate dance with acts bringing peace to the beings. So this means the bodhisattvas, a bodhisattva, not necessarily always a first level bodhisattva, but a bodhisattva can take on the form of other beings, what is appropriate for their liberation, so the beings can understand them, understand their language, and relate to their form. Meanwhile, performing the compassionate dance, that means performances. Dance can be translated here as performances in the ways beings understood. So when you look at the nine modes or the nine demeanors of the dance, things like enticing, seductive, captivating, heroic, terrifying, ferocious, menacing, harsh, threatening, stern, ferocious, wrathful, thunderous, compassion, yearning to tame others, displaying magnificent power and authority and richness and all this kind of thing, and number three, showing great peace and tranquility. All of these qualities at any given time can be attractive to a being and feel like they can relate to that being. Wow, they dance. I like that. I like that nirmanakai. They dance. Or, man, are they show wrath? I love wrath. I've known people, they just love it. They love teachers who are just angry. They're just like, wrathful. I'll tear your head off. Yeah. They like that. And others, oh, they're so kind. They just so peaceful. And then others, man, they go around, they build hospitals, and they do this and this and this. And others, they're wild. They're completely, like, you know, sexual, or they're wild, they're crazy, you know. So these nine demeanors, wrathful deity, are so they can communicate with beings that need different things. Graceful, wow, they're so graceful. Look at the way they move their hand. Look at the way they do things. They're jovial. They're always laughing. I've seen that, you know. You see sometimes written, teacher's always laughing. It's like the first line, but teacher, always laughing. Always laughing. Always cracking jokes. Always cracking jokes. Great. And then so on. So you see these different aspects that people can actually relate to. Yeah? Whereas if the teacher was kind of a neutral ground all the time. Excuse me. But nothing to relate to. Namdi Rinpoche tells a funny story that when he was teaching in England, I think it was at Cambridge or Oxford, he was teaching at the Buddhist group there, the Buddhist group of Oxford and Cambridge. He gave a talk, and afterwards he said, how was that? That was so frightening. Why? Because the entire talk, we expected you to come down on us, to be wrathful, and you never were. So to fit in, as he told me, to fit into British as a Canadian, but even though freshly minted from Burma and Thailand and so on and Sri Lanka, to fit into British culture, he had to fundamentally change so much that he found it difficult. He decided to go back to Canada. Yeah? Or to fit for a Canadian to fit into Burmese culture, or a Canadian to fit or an American to fit into Tibetan culture, or do you see? So there's expectations about how you're supposed to be as an awakened being or awakening being or a teacher. All right. Yes.
Would a highly or fully awakened being be able to display all of those characteristics within themselves at the appropriate times to help being awakened? Would that be sort of a signature of a very powerful awake being?
Not that I know, but But what I have seen, and also written the text, is that yes, and also seen for beings who are very, very awake, they have that ability to display all of those qualities at any given time. And in the texts, the tantras and so on, one should be able to display those qualities. Depends on who they're interacting with, yes. And they must be displaying liberation, not just dancing, not just laughing, not just graceful, not just erotic activity, but they're actually there to liberate beings. Yeah. Thus have I seen and also read about. So there it says, with acts bringing peace to the beings. Peace here means liberation. 94. For those disheartened on existence's road, that is, disheartened by samsara, for their respite, the two wisdoms that lead to the great vehicle had been taught. They are, however, not ultimate. So this takes a little bit of explanation. You may say, well, then what is ultimate? Well, there's one good word for ultimate in the text, which nobody's ever been able to define, although you can go back to how the Buddha used it. All kinds of people have conjured up the meaning of this word omniscience. So when it says, however, are not ultimate, it's referencing it to a fully awakened being that has omniscient qualities. Okay, so the two wisdoms, as taught in the Mahayana and Vajrayana, as follows. The word they're using for wisdom is jnana, J, Spanish A, A-N-A, jnana, long A-N-A, jnana. And that word is not just a knowledge, but a profound realization of primordial wisdom. Now, there is divided into two, and it conforms, in a sense, to the Buddha bodies. On a rough basis, it conforms to the Buddha body of the Dharmakaya, which just like pervasive liberation without necessarily any manifestation. And then the Buddha body of manifestation, but it's divided into four basic activities, Buddha activities. So you have the knowledge of the Dharma Dhatu, which has the Buddha wisdom of evenness, Ratnasambhava, of evenness, the evenness of all phenomena. And you have the Buddha wisdom of Akshobhya, which is mirror-like wisdom. So you have these two qualities in the first kind of knowledge, what they call the knowledge of the Dharma Dhatu. Evenness about all phenomena and mirror-like wisdom. Okay? That's number one. And these are actually talking about the Buddha activities, the knowledge, the wisdom of the Buddha activities. Okay, number two is the jnana, the wisdom that comes from understanding the multiplicity of things. So one is the soul nature of everything, the singular taste. It's like tasting coffee and saying, all coffee is empty. All food is empty. It has the same nature. And then the multiplicity wisdom is that every single coffee, every single drop of water, every single bit of food, every single cloud, every single tree is absolutely different, wondrous, and if you want, perfect in its own nature. So that's called multiplicity. And so multiplicity, the understanding of multiplicity, the Dharma of multiplicity, is the wisdom of discriminating awareness, which is Amitabha. So you're getting a little bit of a tantric college lesson here. And the wisdom of Amitabha, discriminating awareness, that can discriminate the fine nature of things, the emptiness, the fine nature of things, the multiplicity, and the wisdom of all accomplishing fearlessness. That is, able to accomplish in the face of real difficulties. Yeah. Well, in other words, the wisdom that knows that anything can be accomplished under the right conditions and circumstances. These are fantastic. These are called the four Buddha activities. Yeah. So when they describe all the Buddha activities, the Buddha wisdoms, most texts say now all the five wisdoms and the four Buddha activities can be reduced to two. And then the text explain the two. And these are the two. Both is undifferentiated emptiness and differentiated emptiness. And being able to actually handle both and be able to work within both and show beings both. Of which Namjoon Rinpoche was the most amazing master. Of the equality, the indivisibility of those two knowledges, in my experience.
And maybe another way of describing that would be ultimate and relative.
Yes, ultimate, but even more than the way the Abhidhamma explains it, more to do with the compassionate activities of a great bodhisattva, a bodhisattva, to enact the Buddha wisdoms as opposed to understand this is relative and this is absolute. So that's what they're saying here. You can actually go forth and help beings through this kind of knowledge as opposed to saying this is relative. This is absolute. So in other words, you're not necessarily helping anybody. Okay. Number 95. So long not exhorted by the Buddhas, so long the disciples will remain in a bodily state of wisdom, swoon and intoxicated by absorption. This is basically saying if you don't get this, the disciples or the practitioners will stay in a samadhi of cessation, will keep practicing to see how long they can stay in Nirodha Samapatti. See, saying to exhort to ask people to come out of that, to go towards full awakening. 96. When exhorted, then in diverse forms, we'll look at some other translations here, they will become attached to others' welfare. And if they gather stores of merit and wisdom, they will attain the Buddha's full awakening. So that's quite straightforward. If these bodhisattvas are willing and able to take on different forms, different bodily speech forms for the benefit of beings, different guises, different bodies, different shapes, different configurations, different hats, if you wish, they will become conjoined, attached. They will become attached is the wrong word there. I wouldn't use attached. It's too similar to clinging. They will become conjoined and interested and take care of others' welfare. That's what it means. I'd use the word concerned. They will become very concerned about others' welfare. So this brings up the question of what's the difference between concern and worry? Yeah? All of us should be really concerned right now. Like really concerned. Not just with politics, not just with climate change, not with local whatever it is, yes? With a pandemic, we should be really concerned. But that doesn't mean that you have sleepless nights and you worry. You take care of things, right? It doesn't mean. So let's look at the difference. Concern is healthy. Furrowed forehead can be very healthy. Huh? That is really healthy. Can be. Not necessarily this. But sleepless nights and poisoning beings and polluting and so on, harm, that means you're worrying. So to be worried, if it's worry harm, if it's worry concern, okay. But when the worry and the concern becomes paralysis, do nothing. Don't go in there. Don't do anything at all. Or the opposite. So in other words, when it becomes what I would call neurotic behavior, frozen behavior, the hallmark of neurosis, frozen, or harm, continuous patterns of harm, then we have a problem. So here, the word really is not attached, means concerned. You should be concerned. I really liked seeing that with Antoine Boucher, where he's like this, and he's happy, and he's going. And you can see he's concerned for the welfare of beings. Why are they doing that? Why are they acting that way? You can see that. It's beautiful. Yeah? Or the Dalai Lama, or Namjoon Boucher. What are they doing? What? Why? And you can see. And then rolling it over and concerned. Like, geez, this is a problem. So, as opposed to... Nice. So by doing that, by being attached but not burnt, by being attached or being concerned to others' welfare but not burnt, not scorched, they gather stores of merit and wisdom. Okay? They will attain the Buddha's full awakening. So that's what that means. All right. Number 97. Because the propensities for two obscurations exist, these propensities are referred to as seeds of existence. From the meeting of the seeds with conditions, the shoot of cyclic existence is produced. Well, there we go. What an amazing verse. Because of the propensity, because of the force for the two obscurations of emotional delusion and phenomenal delusion. You don't know the nature of emotional attachment or clinging, and you don't know the nature, the empty nature of phenomena. Because of those two obscurations, there will be propensities, there will be volitional states and volitional activity which will become seeds of future becomings. From the meeting of the becomings, the seeds, with conditions, when the right conditions come along, as Namjoon Boucher often would say, when the right milieu, the right environment comes along, the shoot of cyclic existence is produced. So if you stay like this, if all of you just don't do anything, you just stay like this, and you let go of everything, you don't even feel. One of the hallmarks of Neurosamapati is you can't feel anything. You can't even feel your own awareness. So if you don't feel anything, you can't get hurt, right? You can't be disturbed. You can't get hurt. But you're also not generating any future seeds for becoming something. Yeah? So if you engage with beings, it's very easy to find that you're going through reactions and you're setting up the future resultants, which is reacting to things. Therefore, you're going to be following a cyclic pattern of action reaction. Is that pretty clear? So all you have to do is go back in the same environment. So have some of you noticed that when you go back to your parents' homes? Anybody ever experienced this? That you go back to your parents' home and you're now an adult, you're 21, you're 28, you're 34, you're 46, you're 55, and they're saying, you know, but you always love banana cake. You must eat all the banana cake. And I really don't like banana cake. No, you must eat banana cake. What's wrong with you? You know, so something like that. Or they see you, you know, still as a teenager, but you're actually 55 or 40 years old, you see? So they're reacting with the same habit patterns, and then you're reacting back with the same feelings and same patterns as a child or as a teenager, as an adult, and the whole thing just goes up again. So you're in the milieu that triggers all that. That could be the Dharma Center. It could be home. It could be the CNE, you know, and there's a Mars bar, and then there it goes, you know, 5, 10, 20 Mars bars. Walking into an Apple store, getting on the internet, all the propensities, the seeds, come flying out. And that all point the same. That is why we have to get into retreat to see the propensities fall. We have to give those seeds a chance not to bloom. Okay? So what do you do when you have a place where you want to grow a garden? It's quite typical. It's a good method of starting a garden bed in a place where it's maybe not that suitable. You cover it in thick polyethylene plastic, put rocks on it, and let all those weeds and everything else just compost down there for a couple of years, right? And then you go and you plow it and everything else. So that's like a retreat. What's a retreat? You stop. You stop with this, you stop with that, you stop with this, you stop with that, and you let things unbind, and you're not in a situation, that's the monastic ideal, by the way. Also, you're not in a situation that's producing the same reactions and events with the same milieu that you're used to. Does that make sense? It's a new milieu. It's a fresh milieu. It's a fresh environment for the propensities to settle. And that's exactly what's described in the text, is the propensities settle. So people say, oh, it's the meditation technique. Partly yes. It's the teachings. Partly yes. It's simply leaving everything alone. Just let it fall. That's what's so profound about retreating. Just let it fall. Let it fall. It's fantastic. Okay, better move on here. 98. The paths revealed by the saviors of the world, bodhisattvas or Buddhas, which follow the pattern of beings' mentalities. Isn't that interesting, eh? Differ variously among the diverse people due to the diverse methods employed by the Buddhas. So depending on the kinds of beings that you meet, and this is one of the features of a bodhisattva or a Buddha, depending on the beings they meet, they teach to diverse people in different ways, have different mentalities, suitable to what they can hear. A Buddha can. A bodhisattva is not always able to. A Buddha can. So by tradition, a Buddha can teach to any being. Animals, birds, chipmunks, worms. But a bodhisattva may not be able to teach to all beings. There's certain beings they can't reach. They don't have that attainment. Just not going to be able to find the right speech. They won't find the right manner. They won't find the right means to relate to them or to teach them. And it's also said in many texts too that even Buddhas, it says Buddhas can, then it says even Buddhas can't liberate all beings, because no Buddha can liberate a being. A being has to want liberation. So as it says in the text, even Buddhas, not quite like that. Even Buddhas get frustrated. It's like, even they can't. So you know. 99, the instructions differ as the profound and the vast. On some occasions, an instruction is characterized by both profound and vast. Though such diverse approaches are taught, they're all equal in being empty and non-dual. So no matter what the type of teaching of Dharma, now, we're talking about teachings of Dharma, not gardening, not flower arranging, not driving a car, not sending a satellite to the moon, but whatever teaching is true Dharma, a means of a path of liberation for awakening, whatever the means is, whatever the type of instruction is, whether it's Chenrezi, whether it's Guru Rinpoche, whether it's this or that, the Four Noble Truths, they're all in the end equal to being empty and non-dual somewhere in their teaching. Number 100. Okay, we're get closer. Number 100. the retention powers and the bodhisattva levels, as well as the paramita or the perfection of the Buddhas, the omniscient ones taught these to be aspects of the awakening mind. Okay. Not too many people use the word retention anymore. It means dharani. The actual word in Tibetan or Sanskrit you'll see is actually dharani. And dharani is, so for instance, when I recite some mornings, probably every day I should, but in the morning is a dharani, which is a piece of a section of sutra for making an auspicious connection and warding off obstacles for good dharma teaching to happen. Okay, so this passage is taken from a sutra, and that's called a dharani, and that's called retention, retaining dharma all time, retaining dharma, staying with dharma. By reciting a dharani, you actually stay with dharma all day. So we say mantras, but there's other people that actually recite dharanis. They'll recite a passage of a Buddha's teaching, and they'll recite it over and over and over again, like a contemplation, like a long mantra, Om Vajrasattva, almost like Vajrasattva mantra, but it's not. Vajrasattva is not a dharani. And by doing so, their mind really blossoms. Okay, so dharani, which can actually be translated as dharma, the power of retaining or repeating dharma, and the bodhisattva levels, as well, bodhisattva levels of emptiness, as well as the paramitas of generosity, of ethics, of energy, of patience, of samadhi, and of wisdom. The six paramitas of the Buddhas, the omniscient ones taught these to be aspects of the awakening mind. So there you go. If you want to know what the awakening mind is, there you have it. Okay? There you got it. That is being able to retain the power of dharma, the activities of compassion and emptiness of the bodhisattva levels, as well as a perfection of the paramitas. These are what are called facets, if you wish, of bodhicitta. Oh, I hope that's clear. That's an important passage. The six paramitas would be good to look up at some point, or a handout. I can give one on that. One could be made available for you, but that's a whole body of teaching, which is generosity, ethics, energy, patience, meditative concentration, and wisdom. Those six. All right. 101. Those who fulfill others' welfare in this way, constantly through their body, speech, and mind, who advocate the dialectic of emptiness. Dialectic? Yeah, okay. There is no dispute at all of being nihilistic. So in other words, he's saying, those that engage in these three qualities, especially in compassion, emptiness, and development of parami, and really hear and understand the Dharma, through their body, speech, and mind, will not stray into nihilistic emptiness. That's what it is. Yeah. So let me give you an example of that, a really quick example. Someone comes, I can see it, someone comes to the Dharma Center of Canada and says, I want to meditate. Why? Kind of, I've experienced this a few times. I want to meditate. Why? I want to become enlightened. I want to become an arahat. I want to become enlightened. What do I need to do? I'm just thinking of a certain being. Anyways, what do I need to do? Do you tell me? Give me the meditation. Okay, so anyways, time's up for the interview. What can I do? Well, why don't you go to the kitchen and help out with lunch? I'm not going to get a meditation? Oh, maybe later. Okay. Go to the kitchen, help out with lunch, come back, have lunch, nice lunch. Am I going to get the meditation? Well, you know, yeah. I would wait till maybe a bit later for me. Come back. Okay. When? Well, maybe you want to come back and help out with making some food, some supper. Okay. So you see, the being is totally on about their liberation, their suffering, their meditation. And getting them used to the idea that actually their strength and capacity will grow if they do something like do the dishes or help make a meal or sweep the floor or build a cabin or renovate a temple or provide for the liberation of other beings may be actually more important at that stage of their development than any kind of,
well, I'm going to meditate until I'm awakened, man.
Okay. Some people do. I remember she tells a funny story of this one student. 10. It draws a circle around. This is funny. It draws a circle around. Sits down. Like the old timers.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to awaken on 0. And I'm not going to budge until I'm awakened. And then finally, 10. 9. 8, it goes down. 1. 0. Okay, better start again. Okay. So. Wait, now I'm going to reach down. It's so funny. Just crack up. All right.
Okay, so if you do this, you will not fall into nihilistic emptiness. 102. Neither in cyclic existence nor in nirvana the great beings reside. These great beings do not stray into samsara, and they don't stray into nirvana. Even though they may exhibit and teach both, they don't. Therefore, the Buddha's taught here the non-abiding nirvana. So there you have the definition of a very important term in Mahayana and Theravada, which is non-abiding nirvana. Even though you've extinguished dukkha, you're not actually straying into a cessation of dukkha, nor are you straying into busy, collecting, attaching to samsaric formations. So there we go. That's what that means. Called non-abiding nirvana. 103. Even though you may look like a human being, You're all the states of beings and no being at the same time. 103. The single taste of compassion is merit. Isn't that beautiful? That is so beautiful. I'm gonna underline that. I'm gonna use that somewhere in my writings. I mean, that's really good. Yeah. Oh, contamination possible.
Nice.
Okay, go. Bubble. You're not contaminated. Your states are not contaminated. But there is a thing at a relative level called viruses. Okay. Although right now, the chances are pretty low. We've all been in retreat for a while. It's great. Okay. So this is lovely. The single taste of compassion is merit. I don't know if I ever said that before. Anyway, that's just lovely. Thank you, dear. Okay. That should tell you everything. The more compassion of understanding why beings suffer, the more that you help liberate beings, not just care for beings, which is good, not just give them food, but actually give them dharma food, give them the means to liberate. Now you're producing gobs of merit, which is all about why we practice the preliminary liberating instructions. We bring everybody into the field of liberation. The taste of emptiness is most excellent. Those who drink the elixir of emptiness to realize self and others' welfare are bodhisattvas, are conqueror's children. Yeah, that's fantastic. So should you meditate? Yes. Should you meditate for you? Yes. But turn it into whenever you meditate for you, for the welfare of all sentient beings, and you will gain great merit. Otherwise, you won't. You're not generating an ounce of merit. I think this is so confused in the teaching among writings, merit. I get asked this all the time. So tell me, what is merit? Meditation, right? No. Yeah, if you're meditating with the right attitude, you're generating incredible merit. A being in retreat for 10, 15, 20 years could be generating way more merit than anybody maybe busy at a Dharma center or building hospitals or anything, or whatever it is, or running a soup kitchen. It's your intention. Are you bringing all beings in the path of liberation? Yeah. What's your motivation? All right, 104. Bow to them with your entire being. That means pay respects, understand their merits, understand their gift. Bow to them with your entire being. They're always worthy of honor in the three worlds, in the three realms. These guides of the world reside as representatives of the Buddhas. They're saying the Bodhisattvas are representatives of the Buddhas. Why? They have their experience is similar to a Buddha. Their powers, their capacity is similar to a Buddha in seed form, even though they are not Buddhas. Therefore, we should learn to pay respect. It's very, very Eastern. It's not, probably doesn't go down all that well with many Westerners. 105. This awakening mind is stated to be the highest ideal in the great vehicle, in the Mahayana. So with an absorbed, determined effort, generate this awakened mind. Okay? That's very good. So what is this awakening mind? If you look at number 100, it tells you what is needed for the awakening mind. The non-abiding nirvana is described in 102, 103, what really is merit, and then you start to see what you need to gather. 105, this awakening mind is stated to be the highest ideal in the great vehicle, so with an absorbed, determined effort, always recalling, always getting back on the saddle and riding forth on bodhicitta, generate this awakening mind. 106. To accomplish self and others' welfare, no other means exist in the world apart from the awakening mind, apart from bodhicitta. To date, the Buddhas saw no other means. It's basically saying that Buddhas and bodhisattvas, or budding bodhisattvas, discovered there's no other way to get through this without bodhicitta. That's what it's saying. They all discover the same thing. Is this just isn't going to work unless they engage compassion, emptiness, and generating huge amounts of merit. 107, the merit that is obtained from the generation of awakening mind, especially generation stage practices, they're huge with generating merit. Yeah. And that's why they're hard. So people say, you know, but it's hard. I've had people who've been actually Dharma teachers say to me, you know, that generation stage stuff, you know, visualization, medicine, Buddha, and all that, mantras. They've actually told me, this is hard work. Why do I want to do this? Why do it? Because the actual awakening of all sentient beings and bringing all beings in the sphere of your compassionate, empty activities is hard work. But usually with really hard work, we get incredible results. It was wonderful one time, someone in retreat, won't say who it was, but someone that passed away, but someone in retreat here under the guidance of Namdi Rinpoche, was a resident teacher, would complain to me and say, I hate this generation meditation, I hate this stuff. I met a teacher in mindfulness and so on, Vipassana. I hate this stuff. And I think they were doing a lot of medicine Buddha. And Vajragini, that's right, a lot of Vajragini. And I think it was after, they were in a one-year retreat, it was after about six months, I remember being up in the office upstairs, and they came to see me and said, it was just before Christmas, I think, or just after Christmas, and they went, yes. I love this stuff. It just landed. I get it. I'm here for all beings. Like all, after all this teaching and everything, right? I said, I'm really enjoying this. I finally get it. I'm here in the sphere of liberating all beings, not just myself. You know, it was a fantastic moment. They were just like, wow, great, congratulations. That was wonderful. So generate this awakening mind. 106, to accomplish self and others' welfare, no other means exists in the world. Apart from the awakening mind, to date, the Buddhists saw no other means. They just haven't found any other way. 107, the merit that is obtained from mere generation of awakened mind, generation, cultivation, bringing it forth, if it were to assume a form, it will fill more than the expanse of space, all of space. In other words, if it really does blossom, you know, have you ever hear that term cosmic consciousness ever? Cosmic love? It's true. So what they mean here is that when it blossoms, it literally, instead of it being boundless space or boundless light, it will be boundless great love for all sentient beings. As many sentient beings as could fill a universe of possibility. Expansion of mind into spaciousness, but with compassion, great compassion. Right, 108. Well, you know what? Maybe that's enough for today. No, I'm just kidding. At 111, right? You know that? I feel like I'm taking a break for today. Yeah. 108, a person who for an instant meditates on the awakening mind, a person for an instant who meditates on bodhicitta, real bodhicitta, the heap of merit obtained from this, not even the conquerors can measure. So you all put your hands up, okay, I did that. Do I need to do more? So one day, as I'll tell you just a brief story here about this being, I don't really do this very often, but anyway, I hope I don't. But one day, sitting over there, my first Dharma class with Namjoon Rinpoche up in the Hill House there. He was teaching up in the Hill House where the porch was. And my first class ever with him. And I met him, but this is just briefly. And so I went in and sat right here in front of him. And he was teaching on the preliminary liberating instructions on the Nandro, Kamakagi Nandro. And he described about doing prostrations and generating bodhicitta and stuff. And he says, well, if you've had this particular experience, then, you know, you've basically got it. You kind of got it, sort of thing. So I you know, put my hand up. And I said, well, sir, if you've had that experience and you've only done, I think, 10,000, does that mean you can stop, right? Remember this? It looks down. It's like a laser beam, like a phaser beam out of Star Trek, you know, like this. He goes, even if you've had the experience, why wouldn't you continue to 100,000 for the welfare of all sentient beings, not you? I got that one. So there you go. So even if you have these wonderful experiences that are in the text and says you've had this dream, if you have this, if you have that, you go, okay, got it, finished, right? Oh yeah, I had a tumor, went up my spine, or up my center channel, you know, I've opened my head and I feel great and everything else, the whole universe, I love the whole universe and now I feel free, right? Which, by the way, that's what it's like. So yeah, and I feel completely free. If you go to a Mahayana mind retreat, yeah, well, Now? Can you do it now? Yeah? Is that the way it is right now? Yeah? Is this your manifestation? Well, no. Well, then go back to work. So, even if you have a drop of bodhicitta, you have to keep ripening bodhicitta to full Buddhahood. Okay. 109. A precious mind that is free of afflictions. This is the most unique and excellent jewel. It can be neither harmed nor stolen by such robbers as the Mara of afflictions. So, free of afflictions. Beautiful. This is the gift you bring beings. 108. Just as aspirations of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas are unswerving. So this is what's unswerving. What's unswerving is the aspiration to keep liberating beings. And if you train deeply enough in it, or untrain, both, then what will keep coming up is you will automatically liberate beings, and that is your sole purpose in engaging in activities, is liberation. Liberation. The aspiration and conduct. Likewise, those who immerse themselves in awakening mind, bodhicitta, must hold firm their thought, this thought of this aspiration to awaken all beings, the bodhisattva vow, to not just to awaken beings, but to enact and carry out the awakening of beings the best you can. 111. Even with wonder, you should strive, as explained here in the preceding lines. Thereafter, you will yourself realize Samantabhadra's great enlightened deeds. That is, if you read about Samantabhadra in the texts, in the sutras, his deeds were extraordinary to become fully awakened. Then we see that, in fact, we realize that, yes, this quality, this scope of activity and practice is really what's needed. 112. Here we go. Now, good time for a break? What do you think? Come back this afternoon? Okay. You want to continue on? Very good. Very good. 112. By praising the awakening mind, hailed by the excellent conquerors, the incomparable merits I've obtained today from this act, may through this all sentient beings submerge in the waves of existence ocean, travel on the path trodden by the leader of the bipeds. By praising, by honoring, by acknowledging, by recognizing, by bringing to mind bodhicitta that has been declared by the Buddhas, the incomparable merits I have obtained today from this act, by writing these verses, these 112 verses. Yeah, we can say by the incomparable bodhicitta, by studying together and discoursing together and contemplating these 112 that we've done in this retreat, may through this activity, may all sentient beings submerge in the waves of samsara. May they travel on the path trodden or walked by the leader, by the Buddha, by the leader of humans, or by one who is of outstanding two-legged being. Okay. That's it. Complete. This concludes a commentary on the Awakening Mind composed by the great master Arya Nagarjuna. It was translated and edited by the Indian abbot Gunakara and the translator Arapshi Shenyan a very long time ago. It was later revised by the Indian abbot Kana Karvarma and the Tibetan translator Patsap Nima Drak. So it has a long lineage, and according to what I've heard and so on, it is unbroken to this day, all the way back to the time of Arya Nagarjuna, to this present moment. So I'm very, very happy to continue this extraordinary tradition of this reading and explanation of this text. I feel like I can teach that every month for the rest of my life. You know why? Because it contains all, everything. He put everything together here. That's great.
Thanks for sharing with us.
Very excellent. Very, very happy to do so. So, hey. Yay, class is dismissed early today. Any questions? Anything you might have? Not to belabor this, but anything? Wondering what bodhicitta is? Wondering what you practice? Wondering what to do? So some of you, some people here in the room, they occasionally get into difficult spaces or turgid spaces with their practice, and the solution is to train in the preliminaries and to train, and when you practice, when you're in your room, when you're in the forest, whatever you do, you train to practice with every single sentient being. Every single sentient being is meditating with you, and you are helping. If you take that attitude, you are the leader, you are helping all sentient beings. Even if you're not a fully awakened being, you train that way, then you're on the right path. Okay? So this evening, somebody will be leading, whoever's on the list there, leading a Dorje Drolo meditation. And tomorrow morning, I will give a reading transmission of the loving kindness meditation out of the path of liberation, and explanation on the classic loving kindness meditation, and also a reading transmission with some very brief explanation of the preliminary liberating instructions. Okay, that's tomorrow morning, and we'll go from there. And then that's Friday, right? And then Friday night will be, I believe, another Dorje Drolo session. But in the morning, I believe I may be occupied. So we're having a class at 2:30, is it?
Tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow. 2:30? Is that right? So it'll be a class at 2:30. Don't come here at 9 or 9:30. Okay, do not listen to that previous statement. Erase that. Right. 2:30 class. I'll say that for the third time. No class at 9, no class at 9:30. 2:30 afternoon class, Dorje Drolo session in the evening. Okay, great. And I'm going to go off and I think some interviews today. And lovely. I'm so happy to have given that transmission again. Really, really happy.
Thank you.
Wow. What an amazing mind to have unfolded such 112 verses, so complete and so beautiful like that. Wow. Amazing. What a gift to all beings. Let's finish with a dedication aspiration. Okay. And we'll speed up the tempo a little bit.
Okay. Tibetan and English?
Tibetan and English, yes.
Namo Chocho Dijusum Sanje Chanten De Lama Idam Chosum Sedam Che Sindhu Dandra Yamja Varam Chan Tam Che Chen Sen Chen Dar Lam Chen So Dende Dazam Kanyam Tam Che Ki Luna Isam Ke Che Ke Wele Dusum Sarpe Ke Wajene Yam Dore yobe ge wadrene na Dite jantu jambo iso go Seche jawe nompa tajene Deshe namki nompa yonzo sho Rejo kolo tante sachen kya Dejen zepe jene tajene Jiten dejen jokun chokla cho Najo jeju bhaji jo washo Jeju kowe dhuda kuntane Namke zope sanje nyo chok sho Gyurken tantra le jo le gepe Gewe sawa sape tu tenne Kowa nepe du san san chanda Parangre dandi dhampa nyan jorne Kunzang chobe yeshe sakunso Ritja choki landu ne joshi
Santa me duce giuse, modam sempe cercita nuse, duja duce sum durme gene, canzang yam pelon du sanje se, se di di se vita to pece, jene concurre me venduzo, ador orgen la me cujene,
Once who got us in the 10 directions and the 3 times, screws he does, and the 3 jewels all
infinite.
The field. Oh, much virtue of his virtuous actions performed by his body, speech, and mind, he equals his face. Accumulated throughout the 3 times, and sustained this virtue existing from the beginning, was dedicated together in the expanse of awakening.
Having arrived at the state of knowledge of the virtuous of children,
in the state of knowledge of the supernaturally totally perfected, the great stages are pervaded by the demonstration of the wheel of knowledge and liberation, and the holders of those stages having perfected their activities,
carrying happiness to the world and dharma to all my great beings, and may yogis be satisfied with the glory of 10 virtues. Have purified all the sufferings and sorrow of the 6 causes, and quickly have attained the emissions of complete good. Depending on the force of the deliverance of virtue arising from amazing connections of cause and conditions, may the sentient beings of 3 times of existence and sorrow, having actualized the ultimate knowledge of their own awareness, perfecting all stages of primordial wisdom and conductors of Samantha Bodhisattva, abide in supreme space free of obscurations, without objectifying the meaningful benefit of others, according to the capacity of disciples, the rain of Dharma falls corresponding with their interests. Having read the disciples in the state of 3 postures, they attain Buddha in the last dimension of respect to Buddha Samantha Bodhisattva. In this life, the life is conditioned in permanent empty. The constituents of the 5 elements are complete as a fulfilled of 5 families. Having arisen in the form of the group Odiyana and Ardu, may all sentient beings led by those of one who has positive and negative connections immediately go to the church of Ardu. Having ripened and liberated the whole age of such disciples, through many incarnations, the appearances of one's own primordial wisdom, and they all attain the unsurpassed ultimate result.
And a long life prayer for His Eminence, Drikun Lo Anto Rinpoche.
Sasu nise yanki korobu Parse keyo maya tarame Dendi chime dupe gantu so Idam same kongjo tsunayen Ranye dola chape sabo
heartfelt long life prayer for His Eminence Lo Karma Ratna Rinpoche.
Namo Guru Dakini.
Choke Naso Kunzang Yampe Long Dome.
Let's do an invocation of Guru Namjoo. That's very kind, but maybe in a bit. But if you could do a wonderful invocation of Guru Namjoo, so because of such importance, not just here, but for the explanations I have given as well the last number of days.
For the power of compassion and the ten directions of the mirror-like reflections of time and space, the Namjoos appear. Karma Tenzin Dorje Namjo Rinpoche, emanation of ointment Jisri, the victorious one with the voice of the thine own trumpet. Please continue to call all beings to awaken, kindly appearing among multitude of traditions and lands. The Namjoos bring holy dark to those who are bereft. Fearlessly traveling through the 100,000 realms for the benefit of beings in your lineage ever since.
Again,
in the age of transition through the power of virtue, you appear for the welfare of beings.
May the great teaching be heard.
May your direct transmission of truth, Mahamudra, be realized.
May this
be an offering that spontaneously benefits all sentience.
With flaming power fueled by realization of void nature,
your appearance dispels contradictions and defeats uncertainty.
Pray to you
with open-hearted reverence, great teacher.
May your Vajra body
always abide in the three realms.
Joyous waves of wisdom's voice emanate from your speech, evoking the realization of clarity beyond preference, establishing the listener's heart in precious equanimity. May your Vajra
voice continue to sound without end. Samatra Vajra mind of inconceivable essence.
While seeming to appear in
reality
of
balance,
beyond
concepts profound and changing,
may your unshakable
Vajra mind never withdraw.
Through
vast offerings of incomparable riches,
through listening,
contemplating,
and making
real
way,
through
accomplishing
the
two
accumulations,
by this collection
of merit,
may
these
requests
be
fulfilled.
Prayer for Lama Yamdu Choki Jeltsin. Read.
Choku Seyo Pakme Kempe Ter Monko Tuke Jempo Sewe Ter Choku Pema Toten Nupe Ter Kense Nupe Shiba Dendir So Ame Kajin Drupa Lulanching Kanto Droka Takte Dabzato Tade Savon Chula Sheramya Choki Jelsen Menu Soshe So.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for helping all sentient beings awaken.